Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
I'll begin with a confession. I love social media, especially Twitter. I spend a ton of time on it. It has brought me great joy and new friendships and all of the stuff that goes into funding requests and IPOs when these companies are trying to make some cash. And during the pandemic, I've spent even more time on Twitter. Obviously. And now, I kind of hate it. I love and respect the doctors and reporters who tweet out vital information on COVID-19 every day. I hate that I know exactly when every day they'll do that, and that I will see it, and I will feel a little bit worse. I love our listeners who respond to us thoughtfully to talk about our episodes or our guests or why my delivery is so slow. But also, I just cannot deal anymore with the people in our mentions who don't even believe the pandemic exists. All of that is a long way to say that today, I hate Twitter. But ask me tomorrow. And I am sure there is a social media platform that you feel that exact way about over the last year. For obvious reasons, like spending the past 13 months and counting without real in-person friends, social media has been a lifeline for millions of us. It's been where we go to commiserate, to mourn, to be scared, but also to celebrate every little victory. And that experience has put a magnifying glass on social media. The benefits, greater than we might have thought. The annoyances, the hate, even more so. So what has our time on social media this year done to us? How has the past year changed our experience with these platforms? Is it now a more vital tool, an even more racist hellscape? Is it a virtual community, or is it where we go to stand in judgment on one another? And why is TikTok the only one of these platforms that everybody enjoys? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Ronnie Mola is a senior data reporter with Recode who crunched the numbers on our social media use over the past year. Hello, Ronnie.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. I guess I'm doing as well as can be expected. I hope you are as well.
I am.
Why don't we start with, you know, can you give us a sense of before the pandemic began, how people were feeling about social media in general and where it was?
Yeah, people were sort of getting tired of social media. So you were seeing a lot of stagnation in the amount of time spent. You weren't seeing this growth that you had seen, you know, the whole previous decade of more and more and more time spent on social media. A lot of people were out loud complaining about social media. They were also, you know, starting to spend less time there. And all that sort of changed during the pandemic. For the first time, you just saw more, 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 you know, and basically every metric, there was more people using social media, more time spent on social media, more times per day. You know, we just turned to social media for our social lives.
How did that work for us when we all of a sudden started spending so much more time on social media? Do we know if it was positive or negative? Because we've reported a lot and there's been a lot written about, you know, how bad too much social media can be for us.
Right. So there's like always with new technology of the day, there's a lot of hand wringing and there's not a lot of definitive information on like, is it bad for you to be on a screen all day? Is this making people more depressed? A lot, it's been accused of any number of things. The truth is we don't know for sure. We only have, you know, just how it personally affects us. And I say in the article, you know that doesn't feel good to sort of realize I keep checking my phone, you know, umpteen times a day and I'm just pulling to refresh and there's nothing new. Like there's something deeply unsatisfying about that. But, you know, I'm a little hesitant to say that, you know, it's the cause of all the wrongs in society. It's kind of just like the technology and the thing to blame du jour.
Can you explain maybe a little bit to me about how you approached the piece that you did for Recode, tracking social media across the year?
Yeah, I tried to do it both from a data perspective. I talked to a lot of different companies that track social media, that track our usage, that sort of measure how we're using social media, you know, that sort of have this like bird's eye view. And they're the ones from whom I got the information that, you know, we're just doing everything more. We're spending more time on social media. We're doing a wider variety of social media. You know, we're opening up more times per day. But then I also did a call out to both people on my personal social media and through Vox to sort of have people tell me their personal stories about how they felt about social media. And the thing is, you know, we know that people are using it more, but we didn't know, like, I didn't know whether people are just on it more and maybe posting less. You know, I kind of got that feeling myself. I felt like I was always on social media, but maybe I wasn't saying as much. So I was just sort of lurking. And what I got from this call out is that people used it in a variety of ways. You know, some people decided they were going to spend less time on it. Some people spent a whole lot more time on it. People used it to feel better. People said it made them feel worse. So it was very personal.
What I'm really interested in is the way the usage evolved over the course of the year. You know, I imagine right away, the first thing people dived into was like just needing news.
Right. Twitter, especially, people were using just for new information, you know, just what's happening, how many cases are there, what does this disease do? You know, social media at first was this real lifeline, and it, you know, it really did serve as a good approximation of being with people when we couldn't be with them. You know, as the pandemic wore on, this proxy, you know, you started seeing the cracks, that it wasn't exactly a perfect replacement for actually being with your friends, and it sort of wore on people. And you started seeing people complaining about their social media usage, that it was making them feel bad. You know, it's really tough to parse out what was the pandemic and what was everything else, you know, what was making people feel bad. But, you know, people did point to social media and what they were seeing on social media and the arguments and just the unfulfilling nature of it as reasons to maybe even delete it. I have this cool data source on here that is a social media measuring company that looks at what people are talking about online. And increasingly, as the pandemic wore on, people were talking about deleting social media on social media a lot more. Like there was a record number of mentions of, you know, I'm going to delete my account,
right?
Which I think is just sort of an ironic and funny little tidbit.
Do we have any idea if those people actually followed through with it? Have we seen a rise in people leaving social media at all?
I don't think so. I mean, like, I think I'd actually have to go double check the numbers, but you saw so many more people joining social media and people who didn't use social media at all getting on there for the first time that I think it sort of canceled out these people who were talking about it, about deleting it. And, you know, like a lot of times people talk about it, don't necessarily do it, or maybe delete it for a little bit and then get it back. But I tend to think that it was sort of, you know, sort of negligible, like in the scheme of things.
What about trends in terms of the sort of content that people were posting? And here I'm imagining Instagram in particular, which used to be all about like documenting your fabulous life. And I know I've had nothing to post the last year except for like kid and cat shots, and that's it.
Yes. A lot of people mentioned to me Instagram. You know, Instagram has long been criticized for being this place of like idealized perfection. You know, you have this grid of photos and everything looks fantastic. And, you know, it's highly skewed towards these big great events or these perfect views and yourself looking great. And as you said, people, you know, a lot of these big milestones that people would normally post about, you know, my birthday or meeting with a bunch of friends or going on vacation were just impossible. So there was sort of nothing to post in the grid, at least. So you had people using things that were more, that were less permanent, you know, just posting a lot more disappearing links, you know, like stories. The thing that Instagram stole from Snapchat is just the disappearing pictures. So you have a lot more people posting in stories than in the grid. You also have when people, even when people do post in the grid, sort of a less perfection. There was this move towards authenticity, towards complaining, towards focusing on people's deteriorated mental health. So what people were posting, especially on Instagram, became less and certainly less perfect. Someone from eMarketer told me, you know, the less polished, more real side is appealing and it's going to stay. The idea of the airbrushed perfect influencer is probably a thing of the past.
The Big Story will be back in just a minute. Do we know if any particular platform, I hesitate to use the term one, but you know, people have a lot of choice in terms of how they spend their time on social these days. And I myself, I think I've flipped between making habits of a few of them over the last year. What does the data say?
So when it comes to just amount of time spent, you know, the big stalwarts are still there. People still spent a ton of time on, you know, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and things like that. So those didn't go away. Where you saw the most growth, however, was TikTok, which was obviously like a younger platform. So there were fewer people on it to begin with. But TikTok definitely saw just the most phenomenal growth during the pandemic. And part of that was, you know, as I said, they were a smaller platform to begin with. So they had a lot more room to grow. But a part of it also has to do with just the nature of TikTok. You know, it's these short videos, they're entertaining, it's perceived as a little less controversial and, you know, less political than Facebook. Although, of course, there's plenty of misinformation and that sort of stuff on TikTok. It just was sort of seen as this escape, this way for people to sort of find a little bit of joy, kill a little bit of time. TikTok allows people to make their own version of a video. It's sort of expected. You make your own version and it never has to be perfect. So that sort of fit into this idea of, you know, we're not being perfectionists anymore. Everyone can participate. You know, it was fun. It was definitely something to take people's mind off of all the dark things that were going on. So if I were to call a winner for social media, it would be TikTok during the pandemic.
I want to ask you about one of the stats that you've got in your article here. And I don't know if you have an answer to this, but here you have people's feelings towards social media in the past year. And 27% feel a positive sentiment and 73% feel a negative sentiment. And yet usage was up on every platform. And that's, I don't know how to square those two things.
Right. So, you know, there's the how we say we feel, and then there's like how we actually act. Based on the sentiment data that sort of analyzes what people are saying about social media, it was mostly negative for social media overall. And as you point out, people kept using it, you know, but those could sort of be self-reinforcing, I think. Like, they feel bad about it because they're on it all the time. You know, I don't think that's necessarily logical. Like, it makes me feel bad, I'm going to get off of it. It's more, I'm on it all the time, I hate it, and I'm trapped. that's what I think.
When do you think, and I guess, was there anything we could point to when social use stopped being or started decelerating from being this way for us to be together when we couldn't be together and, you know, to get news from a situation that was pretty scary. And, you know, that positive community that we maybe found in times of crisis there to the, oh my God, I'm on here all the time and I hate this part of the pandemic.
It's tough to say exactly, but I would sort of anchor it in time. you know, the fact is that the pandemic just lasted way too long. You know, it's over a year now. As time went on, social media lost its luster. It's, you know, the cracks became more apparent. I'd also point to things that were happening. You know, we have Black Lives Matter, you know, the killing of George Floyd by police officers. The protests are really taking off in June. This was a time for people to sort of get outside again. It's warm, to fight for something they believe in. And then also to run up against, you know, maybe people saying something contrary to that or something negative, or their, you know, racist uncle on Facebook. You know, so it's, you have that. You also have the elections in the United States, which were incredibly partisan. So that made social media feel like, you know, which was being overrun by misinformation, you know, different actors trying to get people to vote and behave in a certain way. You know, so you have a lot of like real life stuff that made it so, you know, it isn't just about you and I communicating and socializing over social media, but it's also about real life and how that's playing out on social media and how like these fissures are really apparent there.
I want to ask you before we let you go about what's next. And I mean, you can probably hear me knocking on wood, but eventually this is going to end, right? I mean, Americans are getting vaccinated right now. Younger Canadians are hopefully not far behind. And I guess what I wonder is if there is, you know, a pent up enough of this that will have a negative impact on social media use once we're finally able to go outside again. I also think of new social platforms like Clubhouse that have kind of sprung up based on the fact that, like, this is the only way we can all talk together. And what happens when all that forced digital community kind of goes away and people have the option to just, like, stand outside with their friends?
So I asked a few people about this, including Shaka McLaughlin, a professor of media studies at SUNY Purchase. And they said that, you know, you would expect that with all the complaining we're doing about social media, that, you know, of course, why wouldn't we just stop using it when we could do, you know, when we could see people in person? The problem is that it's like any other habit. You do something so many times per day for so long, and it sort of becomes second nature. It becomes instilled. So on one end, you have this sort of habit forming thing that we've been doing for way too long, so that it's a bit hard to break. And on the other hand, they said, you know, I do think there's going to be a kind of reckoning when we could go outside. Like, we will come up against the, you know, the joys of the real world. So I'm not sure what's going to happen. But yeah, those are the two things we have to consider, that, yeah, like being outside with our friends is going to be way nicer than being on social media. But also, we've created this habit over the last year.
Well, that's slightly optimistic, but I'm also concerned I will never be able to close Twitter.
Just delete it. No, I should. I'm always on Twitter as well.
Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Ronnie Mola is the senior data reporter at Recode. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Talk to us on Twitter. I will still be there to read them. I can't stop myself. We're at The Big Story, FPN. You can also email us if you don't use social media, and good for you. The Big Story Podcast, all one word, all lowercase, at rci.rogers.com. And as always, find us in your podcast player on Apple, on Google, on Stitcher, on Spotify. Ask for us using your voice assistant. Spend time with us and not online. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.